Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. It is early Saturday morning. What time? Mountain time, about 4 a.m. And a glorious day yesterday. Should be a really nice day today. Been running around the ranch trying to set water. Have a big irrigation project going, which the ditch seems to work fine. The feeder to the ditch, not so well. But, you know, trial and error. You have to see how it works. And unlike our friends on the left, we know that water runs downhill. I have lots to cover with you this morning. We're going to have our historical story, which I think you'll find particularly intriguing since it's a personal historical story. And there's a motto in it, which is apropos for these times. We're going to talk a little bit about Memorial Day. And in the context of Memorial Day, this overreach, overburden, deprivation of rights that are going on in the blue states. And people standing up to it, I might add. And the more, the merrier. We're going to talk a little bit about yes, our favorite person, Barry Obama, Barry Sotero, who changed his name to Barack Hussein Obama, which was his father's name. I've said it several times on the show, but if you want to know who Barry O is, you need to read his book, Dreams from My Father. Not to, not of, Dreams from My Father. His father was an alt-left Marxist Islamist who was also an alcoholic and died in a car wreck. But that is yet another tale. And we're going to talk within that context about the manifestations of this control, the moving of the goalposts by the blue state governors, and in conjunction with what Nancy Pelosi is trying to get through with her bill and the other bill 6666, which I talked about last week, the tracking bill, you know, basically, basically they just track you everywhere. They know everything. They know who you are and where you go and who you consort with and what it's about. You know, it is George Orwell, 1984 on steroids. We can all change our names to Winston. Those of you who have read the book know what I'm talking about. And Winston's rats, they seem to think, is our COVID. And as a little sidelight here, for those of you who haven't read 1984, Winston tries to stand up to George Orwell's deep state, if you will, the thought police and the Ministry of Information. And one of the things they try and get to him to admit is that 2 + 2 = 5, which of course he refuses to do. However, they find out his great fear, and his fear is rats. And that's all I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to ruin the book for you. You know, I'm an author. I don't give spoilers. By the way, as an aside, I am working on book 5 and 6. I'm late, as usual. And this water season here on the ranch has not helped. The COVID thing has not helped either. I mean, the insanity of the COVID thing. Printers not being able to get paper. Printers, you know, having to social distance. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, the whole thing just makes me wretch. But they will be coming out. And those of you who are signed up on the publisher's website will be getting a ditty here in the next week, bringing you up to date. By the way, the publishers, they have some great deals. They call them the hunkered down deals. And they did a kind of a special thing on my books. You can get all four books that are out for, I think, it's like $45. I mean, it's really, it's half price, just about half price of what you pay in Barnes & Noble, and it is way under what you pay for the four books at Amazon. And you can get any single book for $11 plus postage. I think it comes out to about $15. It's a rocking deal for those of you who want to give gifts or need to pick up the next novel in the series. Just a word to the wise. And that's all I'm going to say about the books. And by the way, if you are not subscribed to the publisher's website, then you are not in the know. The Threads West Facebook page, facebook.com/ThreadsWest, would be a place to get information. But the best place is the publisher's website, www.threadswestseries.com. ThreadsWestSeries.com. Sign up there. They really, really, really don't mail out much stuff. I mean, sometimes you can go for 3 months and never get a newsletter from them. And when they do, there's information, and it is the only accurate information related to these books. Don't believe anything you read on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashword. It doesn't matter. They're wrong. They're always wrong. Okay. Let's get on with this, because the other thing we're going to be talking about this morning is what they're trying to do with the voter stuff. And there's some cases now that are surfacing on really kind of rampant voter fraud that kind of pop your eyes out. And we all know that this vote by mail, same day registration, no ID, ballot harvesting, it is just a ploy to try and steal elections. The big one, i.e. the presidency, and all the little ones. And their dry run, which was very successful for the left, was to take the 7 congressional seats in the Orange County area and several other conservative areas of California in 2018. You may have noticed that all the Republicans, all of them, all 7 seats, were ahead anywhere from 1 to 4 points on election night. And you know, then all these ballots were being harvested. You know, these absentee ballots, these vote-by-mail ballots that hadn't been mailed in that were being collected. And can you imagine? In the end, although it took several weeks because ballots were coming in for several weeks after the election, imagine that. We lost all 7 seats by anywhere from 1/4 to 0.5 point. I think one was 1.2%. You know, can you imagine what an advantage it is to know at the close of election night, the polls are closed, everything is out, all the votes are counted, you know your opponent is ahead by 2.5%, I'll take a number. And then you go out and you, quote-unquote, harvest enough ballots over the next 2 weeks following the election to just eke out a victory by 0.25%. Well, imagine that on a national scale, which is what they're trying to get done. We're also going to talk about China. I've gotten a lot of emails on my, I don't want to call it a prognostication, on my warning that a shooting war with China is not likely, but highly possible. And we're going to go into that a little bit more this evening. I'm going to bring you up to speed as I did this morning. I'm going to bring you up to speed as I promised I would last week on some of the things the military is doing to prepare for that. And some of the things that the Chinese are doing to prepare for that. And all the other little bands of friction which are starting to, shall we say, glow red between the two countries. And between China and Europe, although, you know, I don't know what Europe's going to do. I guess they'll Andrea Merkel will shoot rubber bands at him or something. And there's a really interesting thing going on with Japan in that context, because they are rapidly building up their naval forces. If you remember, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but Japan was not allowed to rearm after World War II. I'll tell you how they're getting around that, particularly with the assistance and help of the United States, who is eager for a major Asian ally to confront China in the Pacific. Then we're going to talk about, a little bit about some sobering economic facts. And I don't mean the 33 million poor souls who have lost their jobs, although they're getting paid, you know, roughly double, anywhere from 25% to 50% more than they were being paid at their jobs. But, you know, that has an end too, although the Democrats would like to keep it going. I'm going to talk to you about a much bigger picture economically. And then we're going to finish up the show with more, because I've gotten a boatload of emails and texts and all sorts of stuff on my little, should we say, and once again, not a warning, but an admonition to be prepared, whether it's for a natural disaster, whether it's an EMP, which is, you know, China has told us what they want to do, whether it's another pandemic, you know. If I hear the word lockdown, if I hear these screaming memes on the left talk about, if you go out without a mask, if you leave your house, you're going to die, you're going to kill people. I mean, make me puke. These people are, you know, it's transparent, folks, what they're doing. And we're going to go into that this morning also. So that is the show. Now, let's start with our historical story. So it is Germany, late 1938. The pogroms have already started. There are Jews and other non-Nazi infidels, you know, non-Aryans, being shipped off the concentration camps. Nobody really knows what's going on, but, you know, the German soldiers come, the SS comes, and this Jewish family is gone, and that Jewish family is gone. There was a huge night of terror throughout Germany that was propagated, of course, by the Nazis, where roving gangs of Hitler Youth broke into Jewish homes across the country, stole stuff, broke stuff, terrorized the family. And I've talked a little bit about it on other shows. I'm not going to go into detail here. But there is a man who is a cattle farmer. There are no ranches over there. They're cattle farmers, small, relatively small, 100, 200 acre tracts of land. And they raise cows on a rotational basis, kind of first rotational grazing. And, of course, they sell them at the local markets, at auctions. And this man is Jewish, and his father was a decorated war hero. In fact, the Iron Cross, which is Germany's highest honor, it's Germany's medal of honor, if you will, the equivalent. And he was a officer in the Wehrmacht, the German army in World War I. So a big war hero. Also, by the way, a cattle farmer. Anyway, his son had already shipped the kids off to America. The boy had been 14, and his sister had been 11. And they had gotten them out of the country in the previous 2 years. And although the man's wife did not want to leave their cozy little farmhouse and her friends, even as terrorized as they were, The man prevailed. Something told him, his gut told him, his common sense told him that this was not a situation that was going to get better. It was only going to get worse. So they make plans. They embark a ship in Bremerhaven. And while they're on the ship, and the ship is mostly German Jews fleeing Germany. This is early 1939. There's whistles and shouts and uniformed Nazi soldiers all of a sudden on the wharf below the ship. And the passengers are informed that their papers are going to be inspected. Well, the man who had talked his wife out of hauling all sorts of trunks and china and all that stuff, he just wanted to get out of Germany and to America as soon as possible. He figured he'd rebuild their lives there, and they had smuggled some of the family fortune. I don't know if you'd call it a fortune. Some of the family wealth out of Germany in the form of diamonds sewn in the hems of the coats of the kids they had sent out earlier. Sent to America earlier. Anyway, something, once again, that intuitive sense, that common sense, that deductive reasoning, the gut level, triggered in this man. And he turned to his wife and said, "Leave all our luggage. We're leaving the ship." And she went, "Are you crazy? I have all my stuff and my nice dresses," and, you know, you can imagine the conversation. He goes, "We're leaving the ship with no luggage because we have to tell them that we were visiting friends who are departing. And if we walk down the gangplank with luggage, they will know that we are trying to disembark." Make a long story short, they walk down the gangplank through the German soldiers, telling their story that they had just been visiting some friends who were departing and that they were going home, and the German soldiers let them pass. They went straight to a train station and boarded a train for Switzerland. The Nazis had not yet effected total control over the rails, although they had effected, obviously, total control over all ships leaving any port in Germany. They get on a train to Switzerland. They had to switch trains several times when they saw German soldiers on tracks, etc., like get off the sidecar. Everything by gut, everything by instinct, everything by common sense, and with a decided mission. It took 3 or 4 months, but they did make it to Switzerland and finally sailed out of a northern European country to America, and where they rebuilt their lives, stayed kind of in the cattle business, and their son also, amongst other things. And the moral of this story, there's two kind of denouements I'm going to share with you here. The moral of the story is always trust your gut. Always employ your common sense. And always act on your common sense and your gut combined. And I will tell you during the course of this show why it ties in to this mess we find ourselves purposely thrown into at the current time. And now the second, as Paul Harvey would say, rest of the story, ending point of our historical tale. That man was my grandfather. My great-grandfather, the war hero, had decided that he was safe because, you know, he was the holder of an Iron Cross and he had been an officer in the army. He and his wife died at Auschwitz. My grandfather and his wife did quite well in America. So that, folks, is your historical story for this morning. Now let's get into the meat of the show, shall we? So we have we have Barry Obama beginning to enter the fray of this election, because obviously you can't pit Joe Biden against Donald Trump. So this has to be, they're gonna try and create, if you vote for Joe, you're really kind of voting for four more years of me. That's really kind of the tact that they're going to try and take. And in the course of his commencement speeches, all virtual, of course, because we don't want to get the virus, last week, Barry questioned the rule of law. He took shots at Trump over the handling of the virus, etc., but he questioned the rule of law, and he also repeated that in a phone conversation he had with his, you know, top alt-left cabal. And the attorneys for General Flynn, I'm not going to get into the whole General Flynn thing. You know the story. I'm sure you have your feelings on it. But basically what he said was that, oh, no time in history has anybody admitted to perjury and blah, 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 blah. And anyway, Sidney, the attorney for Flynn, Sidney Powell, wrote an open letter which has gone viral back to Barry Obama. I'm just going to tell you a few parts of it because, number one, you'll find it fascinating, and number two, it once again reinforces just how bad, how evil, how untrue, and how manipulative and nasty Barry O is. And we're contending with his stuff right now, folks. Don't think for a minute that we would be facing this lockdown nonsense crap if we had not been conditioned, if the deep state had not been strengthened, if Democrats had not maintained their blue state strongholds because of his 8 years in office, amongst other things. One of the things he said in his conversations and his commencement speech, quote, "There is no precedent that anybody can find for someone who has been charged with perjury just getting off scot-free." That's the kind of stuff where you begin to get worried that basic, not just institutional norms, but our basic understanding of rule of law is at risk. I mean, how rich is this? This is a guy who broke multitudes of laws, should be tried for treason, and should be given the maximum penalty under the Constitution of the United States, along with the rest of his cabal. And a few Republicans, too, I might add. Sidney Powell's response in this open letter that went viral across the internet was, I'm just going to read you a short part of it. Quote, "General Flynn was not charged with perjury, which requires a material false statement made under oath with intent to deceive. A perjury prosecution would have been appropriate and the rule of law applied if the Justice Department prosecuted your former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe for his multiple lies under oath in an investigation of a leak only he knew he caused. McCabe lied under oath in fully recorded and transcribed interviews with the Inspector General for the DOJ. He was informed of the purpose of the interview and he had the benefit of counsel." Excuse me. "He knew that he was a leaker. McCabe even lied about lying. He lied to his own agents, which sent them on a wild goose chase, thereby making his lies material and an obstruction of justice." And she goes on. What this comes down to, folks, and I have talked about Director Ray since he was appointed. I did not like him at all to begin with, and this is before I knew a lot about him. I just didn't like his manner. You know, I employed common sense and gut level. Okay? Common sense and gut level. And I didn't like the guy from the first time I saw him on the tube being his pompous ass deep state self. And unfortunately, my gut level has been correct. Because he is a slime ball, and he needs to be canned out of the FBI. One of the things which I, once again, I told you that I did not know a lot about Ray. I learned in the last several weeks, and I shared with you, that one of the reasons he's been dragging his feet is that Andrew Weissman, who is probably the biggest scumbag prosecutor of all time, who was on Mueller's team and actually ran the team. Mueller was, you know, a corrupt figurehead. There are ties between Ray and Andrew Weissman. I did a little research this last week, and I learned what those ties are. Listen to this. This will set your hair on fire. As backdrop, if you remember the Enron case, this is, 10, 15, whatever years ago. And Enron was definitely, you know, not a nice outfit at all. But Andrew Weissman was the lead prosecutor, who did all the dirty tricks he's done forever. Withheld exculpatory evidence. Coerced, threatened, cajoled to get guilty pleas. The guy is a bad, rotten, nasty apple. He is an insult and a travesty to the law profession. He is a... Given what he did in the Mueller deal, probably a traitor under the Constitution. But here's the connection, folks. Not just general, but specific. So in the Enron case, the other people that were prosecuted besides Enron was Arthur Andersen, one of the Big Eight accounting firms. I mean, sterling outfit. Employed 10,000 people around the world and in the United States. Anyway, Arthur Andersen had to fold because of all that. 10,000 people lost their jobs. Enron, of course, was a complete disaster. I was wrong. 85,000 jobs at Arthur Andersen. 85,000 jobs. Anyway, Arthur Andersen had to close. Four Merrill Lynch executives were sent to prison on an indictment that criminalized an innocent business transaction. And Andrew Weissman hid the evidence that showed those defendants were innocent for 6 years. Both cases, the Arthur Andersen case and the Merrill Lynch case, all of which was connected to Enron, were reversed on appeal for their overcriminalization and misconduct. The Andersen case, folks, and I've talked about this, so this will tie in to those of you who have been long-time listeners, was reversed by the Supreme Court 9-0. You know, there's not a lot of 9-0 votes in the Supreme Court. That's how bad Weissman is. And of course, he was on full display during the Mueller investigation. They knew well there was no collusion for 2 years. They wasted $40 million in taxpayer money, put the country through a ringer, and then wrote a 400-page report, 250 pages of which was obstruction of justice speculation, and the other 150 pages was, oh, there's no collusion, which they knew up front. Well, here's the tie-in for you. Yeah. Andrew Weissman, the guy that was in charge of the Enron deal, the Arthur Andersen deal, and the Merrill Lynch deal, and to whom Andrew Weissman reported directly, was none other than current FBI Director Wray. I wonder why Wray's been dragging his feet for years to fork over information and hiding stuff and playing rope-a-dope in his Senate and House hearings. The guy has to go, okay? In fact, you know, you could make an argument right now that the FBI should be disbanded. Just start over. Because I personally think, I know that everybody jumps up and down, oh, it's just it was the 1% at the top. Look, there's no doubt in my mind that there is a great many FBI agents and FBI personnel who take their job seriously, are great patriots, follow the Constitution, uphold the law, etc. But I do believe, and I've said this before, that the corruption runs far deeper than 1%. You got to remember that Barack Obama was in office, you know, here he is again, was in office for 8 years. He had time to appoint all his head lackeys as the heads and assistant heads of all these departments and agencies. And his lackeys had plenty of time to appoint underlings who were in line with the globalist alt-left Barack Obama Democratic Communist Party agenda. That's why you see in the FBI, the onion that has been peeled the most, perhaps, that's why you see in the FBI stuff trickling all the way down to agents, although top-rated agents, like Strzok and Page, and second and third level Department of Justice attorneys like Bruce Orr. That's way down the ladder, folks. It's more than 1%. And Wray has done nothing to clean this up. In fact, he has done everything he can to sabotage the cleanup. He must go. Must go. And you know, although it's been said on a few shows, I love the idea of appointing General Flynn as a director of the FBI. I love it. I absolutely love that idea. And you know, he cleaned it up in about 1 month. Who better to clean up the FBI than a victim of the FBI and the deep state? Anyway, I think that revelation should make your eyebrows go up. And you know, that kind of brings us right into that pompous abuse of power, that arrogant feel that you can do no wrong, that nothing will happen to you, that you can run amok over people, over people's lives, over people's rights, over the Constitution. That's been on full display here. That, folks, is the attitude of many of the blue state governors. Peel down there, or Beal down there in Kentucky. I don't know why Kentucky keeps electing Democratic governors, same as Montana. This nasty guy in Illinois who shuts down all travel but sends his family to Florida. Cuomo in New York, whose health director, I mean, Cuomo now has the cojones to be blaming Trump and the CDC for his order forcing nursing homes to take in COVID-19 patients, causing 4,800 deaths in New York. Older folks in nursing homes. Despite pleas and cries by the nursing homes and the Nursing Home Association to not do it. Not wise. People will die. We don't have the equipment. We don't have the staff. We don't have the training. We don't have the facilities. No, no, you got to take them. And now he's blaming Trump. It's remarkable. That's all I can tell you. Remarkable. Aided and abetted by a corrupt press. The press is far more than fake news, folks. The press is corrupt. They are agenda. They are the epitome of agenda-driven corruption. They are an enemy of the people. And I don't mean they as in 100%. I mean they as in MSM, with very, very few exceptions. Look at PBS getting $75 million, like, you know, gag me, in this that Pelosi held out for. I mean, this is how scummy these deals are. You know, you're thinking to yourself, now why would she hold out why would she hold up funding to hundreds of thousands of small businesses that are on the precipice of bankruptcy in the middle of this huge conflagration of fear, economic ruin, you name it. Why would she do that for $75 million of PBS and $25 million of the Kennedy? I mean, just absolutely detached matters. Well, folks, if you've been listening to PBS lately, and I do listen to them from time to time, just because it's informative. I don't mean informative in terms of information. Informative in terms of attitude. PBS has gone off the deep end. The lockdowns need to keep coming. Hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. Trump is a maniac. Trump was behind. Trump didn't act in time. All the 100,000 deaths are Trump's fault. That was the deal, folks. The deal was, if I get you $75 million, you got to spend all the time between now and the election blasting everything Trump, Republican, conservative, you name it. If you got a chance to blast it, you got to blast it, and you get $75 million. That was the deal. Common sense. Gut level. That was the deal. Anyway, I slightly digress. Because these blue state governors, I have to tell you, they are doing nothing right now, but moving the goalposts. Now there's several of them that say, oh, well, we can't open until there's a vaccine. Well, folks, there may or may not be a vaccine. It may or may not be in 6 months or 18 months. It may or may not be effective. Nonsense. That wasn't the deal. And then others are saying, well, we have to have this, the equivalent to a state-run House Bill 6666, tracking everybody. We need to hire hundreds of thousands of trackers to track people and interview them and find out their medical records and know who they're sleeping with and know who they're talking with and doing business with, and etc., etc. That was never the deal. You know, one governor, I believe it was either New Jersey, you get them all mixed up. I believe it was New Jersey. Was it New Jersey? In any event, his new criteria, the movement of the goalposts, is coronavirus has to be gone. Oh, really? I won't open the state until the flu is gone. I won't open the state until the common cold is gone. Just preposterous. And what's becoming evident, I think, to the great majority of Americans, who, by the way, are getting pissed off over this, what's becoming self-evident is that the models have all been wildly wrong. Many Americans, like myself, and probably many of you, think the shutdowns should never have occurred. Zero. Nada. many Americans, I'm assuming many of you, believe we've been blatantly lied to. And we all know that fear is their weapon, and the press has done everything they can to support their left-wing fearmongers. Did you notice in the last week, I'm going to come back to this state thing, but did you notice in the last week while we're talking about this scummy press, you know, people are kind of over this virus. The infectations are on the way down. Hospital beds are on the way down. That doesn't matter to the blue state governors. I mean, Vermont is not allowing any travel into their state except under, like, the strictest conditions. Anybody who knows anything about Vermont knows that tourism is, it might be 50% of their economy. It's huge. Huge. Do you know how many, I'm not making this up. Do you know how many people they have in the hospital in the entire state of Vermont right now for COVID? Three. One, two, three. Three. They had less than 1,000 cases in the whole state, and 54 people, most of them elderly again, 54 people unfortunately died. And Vermont's in lockdown, and you can't travel into Vermont except, you know, I guess by special governor's edict, because he controls all. He's Lord and King. And you're seeing the same type of nonsense in most of the other blue states. This Inslee character out in Washington, I mean, gag me. Northam in Virginia, triple gag me. Murphy in New Jersey, somewhat reasonable but totalitarian. Whitmer, quadruple gag me in Michigan. And, of course, the slime ball in Illinois. And they're shut down tighter than a drum. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, Newsom, to some degree, out in California. I mean, most of these states, this was originally going to be 2 or 3 weeks until we flatten the curve. The curve's been flattened for 8 weeks. In many places, it's in steep decline. And I don't think it had anything to do with the lockdown. Am I a doctor? No, but I have common sense and gut. And my common sense and gut are telling me right now that these governors are keeping these states locked down and moving the goalposts to extend the lockdowns. Number one, because it damages the overall national economic comeback, and that damages Trump. You know, the hell with their constituents. The hell with all those poor people whose small businesses are folding, struggling. You know, who cares? They're mostly Trump supporters anyway. You know, no churches. Mm-mm. Nope. Nope. And if you think it's no churches because it's a health concern, folks, it's no churches because, number one, these people have no God. Government is their God. Their power and control is their deity. And number two, because, you know, most of those church people are Trump supporters, and they're going to go to church and they're going to talk to one another and get each other to vote. We better keep it closed. In the meantime, abortion clinics, Walmart, Costco, comma, other big stores, blah, 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 blah. They're fine. Yep, that's cool. But you can't go to church. No, no, no. I mean, there are governors that are out towing cars out of church parking lots. In Kentucky, a bunch of left-wing friggin' loons, there's a church that refused courageously, good for them, to shut down. They said, you know, this is our God-given right under the Fourth Amendment, and we're going to have church. And a bunch of left-wing loons burned the church down. I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't instigated by that moron who's a governor in Kentucky. I mean, it's just outrageous. People getting $1,000 tickets for sitting in their cars, spaced 6 feet apart, the cars, with their windows up, listening to a sermon at the church, and they're in the parking lot. They're getting $1,000 tickets. And you've heard the story about the barber, you know, in Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's another blue moron governor, Mr. Love. Have you noticed, folks, that all these people, you know, I did a show, it was right after Las Vegas, which was a tragedy. I have to revisit that. I told you I wasn't going to let that go. There were two things I've told you I'm not going to let go. Benghazi, which, by the way, is coming back. More on that next week. And the Las Vegas shooting. Because that was another, that's a really weird deal in Las Vegas. But if you take all these things, if you take what the blue states are doing in these absolute totalitarian, no common sense applications, it comes down to all politics, all power, all control. And it's being masked as a concern for your health. And the hospital beds. We don't want to overcrowd those empty hospital beds. You know. We don't want our health system breaking down. Oh my God, it'd be the end of the world. Look. I am hopeful. And this ties kind of into my Memorial Day message. I am hopeful that at the least, look, there's the 25 or 30% of the country who are scared out of their minds, hunkered down in their basements, in their too tight pajama bottoms, typing madly away with comments on HuffPo. I mean, you know, they are wimps. They want to be scared, fine. You have the right to be scared. If you want to stare at your basement wall for 6 months, you have that right. You want to wear pajamas that are too tight and not throw them in the washing machine, that's your right. But you do not have the right to get in my face and tell me what to do. As I have said for the last 2 weeks, no, we are not all in this together. We are in this as Americans, but as Americans, we are individuals. We can make our own choices. We can decide whether we're going to go hither, yither, and yon. We can decide, unless it's a prerequisite of the establishment, because they have the right to do that prerequisite, to not wear a mask. You know, that symbol of the great fear, which is why they want you to wear the mask, folks. Don't give me this crap that walking down a beach or walking your dog in the park requires a mask. Sorry. No common sense. My gut tells me otherwise. It is BS. But when you see everybody running around with a mask, you remember that there's this horrible virus on the loose. And if you take that mask off, or if you go out too often, or if you see too many people, or if you start your business, you're going to die. And if you don't die, you're going to kill somebody. Nonsense. This is all about politics, power, control, and money. And these people should be tried for treason and hung. Period. And I don't know, maybe YouTube will yank me down for saying that. I really don't care. I am past the point of caring. I am royally pissed off. Which brings us to Memorial Day. So, you know, ever since Tom Dawes and Paul Revere made their famous ride the night of April 18th, 1776. To arms, to arms. The redcoats are on the march. They were several hours ahead of the columns of redcoats coming out of Boston to seize the powder and balls and muskets stored at Lexington and Concord, and hopefully to nab some of the, shall we say, rebel ringleaders that had been taking shelter in those villages outside of Boston. And they were, of course, met at Concord by the Minutemen, and at Lexington also. And the first shot was fired at Lexington, which has come to be known as a shot heard around the world. By the way, as an aside, if you've never read it, let me suggest a book which I think you'll find fascinating as patriots and Americans and students of history. It's called The Guns of April. I've read it several times. I think you'll find it fascinating. I'll just leave it at that. But it is about that day. And we have just as men rose up as Dawes galloped by. I don't know if you know this or not. Paul Revere was captured early in the ride by the British. The alarm was really spread by Tom Dawes. A little historical fact for you. But these men stood up. They grabbed their powder. They grabbed their muskets. Their pouch of balls. And they stood in a ragged line. At the Concord Bridge. And the Commons of Lexington. Against an array of hundreds of soldiers of the world's greatest army. It is inspirational. And of course, you know the rest of the story. After the first shots were fired, militia, word spread rapidly. I mean, it's like the sagebrush grapevine in the West. Word spread rapidly. Thousands of men grabbed their muskets and hammered the British troops with ambushes all the way back to Boston. The British lost hundreds of men. It was an incredible defeat of the world's greatest army. And then, of course, came Bunker Hill, etc. But this is not a history lesson this morning. There's a point I'm making. And then think forward to the men who charged the fields at Gettysburg, who defended the gold fields of Pike's Peak at the Pigeon Ranch, at Glorieta Pass, from the advancing Texas Confederate Army. Or the men that charged up those hills in Cuba. Or the boys, the doughboys, as the Americans were called, gasping for air, choked by poison gas in the trenches of Belleau Wood. Or the staccato of 50 caliber machine gun fire, angulated from the pillboxes above Omaha Beach. And the whirl of helicopter blades through the jungles of Vietnam. The screams of the Red Chinese Army pouring across the 48th parallel in Korea. And the hot, sandy winds punctuated by automatic fire in the sands of the Mideast. You know, over the roughly 2.5 centuries since those men heeded the call and stood there untrained in a ragged line with just a few shots of powder and ball against the British Army. Millions of men and women, courageous men and women, have heeded that call. And more than a million, folks, way more than a million, have not come home. And that is what Memorial Day is about. And they died for freedom. They gave their life for America. They sacrificed for their countrymen and successive generations. It is their sacrifice that affords us the choice right now to muster at Lexington. To stand our ground at the Concord Bridge. This grab for power, this trampling of our rights, this disregard of the Constitution, this disdain for individuality, this abhorrence of the American people and their rights and their common sense and their gut must stop. You know, I asked all of you to think about, this was, oh, I don't know, 6-12 months ago. I've asked several times. I asked all of you to think about what you would do if they came a knocking on your door and wanted your guns. The time to think about it is now, not then. And I'm going to ask you another question. Are you going to take this crap? Are you going to take this BS? Those men and women that died so that we could have this choice over the last 250 years did not die so that we would keep our mouths shut. They did not die so that we would cower and relinquish our rights in return for a security that doesn't exist. They did not die so that elitist morons and traitors can walk on our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. There's going to be other things coming in the future, folks. You're going to have this vaccine battle going on. You know, they're talking about the health certificates and the chips and all this stuff. We'll talk about that over the coming months. It might be time for you to start thinking about, are you going to get the vaccine? The flu vaccine, where 30% of the people who get the flu vaccine still get the flu? You trust what they put in that stuff? Folks, how about chipped? You gonna get chipped so they know where you're at? Or have them load special apps on your phones so they can track you and trace you? Or call up and give intimate medical details to the tracers? Hell no. Hell no. All right. The attack on our rights through this creation of fear. Have you noticed? I got a little waylaid on this. Have you noticed? You know, everybody's kind of toned down on COVID now. Over the last week, the press, I mean, I have such disdain for that. I'm a trained journalist, and I have disdain for these people. Just terrible disdain. Over the last week, the press, including PBS, who got their $75 million, I mean, there's been like six stories. Story number one, people who got, sailors who got COVID-19 on the USS Theodore Roosevelt, they tested positive again. Oh my God, if you got COVID-19, you might not be immune. I'm not even going to give you the subtext on all this stuff. Let me just say that, you know, it is lying by omission, lying by distortion. Lying by simply making stuff up. So, you know, they introduced the fear factor of, you know, even if you get COVID, you can get it again. And then there was a bunch of articles on the second terrible, dastardly, overwhelming wave of COVID coming our way in November. And then, of course, there's been stories on Florida and Georgia. You know, it's kind of interesting because Polis, a Democrat in Colorado, is opening up much more rapidly than the other blue states. The press hasn't said anything about that, but they are just screaming up and down about DeSantis in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, who are opening up very rapidly. Wyoming, I guess, is too small for them to scream about. And then they tried to take pot shots at Nielsen, I believe her name is, the governor up there in South Dakota, Republican governor. I love her. She's great. She never shut down the state at all. Not even restaurants. And they did just fine. They did just fine. And you know what? All these cases, the press was jumping up and down. Oh, they're going to double. They're going to triple. All their hospital beds are going to be full. Florida has declining cases, declining deaths, declining hospitalizations. The same with Georgia. The same with Alabama, except for one spike county. The same in South Dakota, who never shut down at all. The same in Wyoming, which barely shut down. I mean, bottom line is it was restaurants, gyms, and movie theaters. And then there was a story, and then there was a story that the virus is mutating into something much more deadly and much more contagious. Gee, I don't know. They already told us this was like the most contagious thing that ever come to the planet Earth. But now it's even more contagious and more lethal. I mean, it's like the Andromeda stain. You breathe in this virus from 50 feet away because you don't have your mask and you left your house, and your blood is going to turn to sugar granules and you're going to kill over dead. I've had it with this crap. And I hope you have too. And if you have, you know what? Get the word out. Because there's not a lot they can do with 125 million of us bubbas saying no. In fact, they can't do squat. And if push comes to pull, we can't. Whole thing is outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. And now they're trying to screw with our vote. Let me tell you this little story. You know, all the Democrats always say there's never any voter fraud. There's no evidence. I mean, that's a standard mantra. There's no voter fraud. There's no evidence of that. You're making this up. Blah, 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 blah. Well, I've told you about Judicial Watch. They sued 4 states, noticed like 7 others. 2.5 million, folks, I want you to think about this. 2.5 million dead, moved, or, gee, their address is a vacant lot. People in L.A. County alone on the voter rolls. 250,000 in Wisconsin. And the Democrats argued about whether they should be removed. You don't want to remove dead people from your rolls. You want to move people who have you don't want to remove people who have moved to, you know, Arkansas. Well, why would that be? For the same reasons they want mail-in ballots, same-day registration, no voter ID, and ballot harvesting. And not only is this being pushed by the Democrats, being pushed by, you know, Eric Holder, Barack Obama, there he is again, Barack Obama's quote-unquote wingman. There was a case that was just uncovered, one of many. Texas found 95,000 illegal votes in the last election. 95,000 votes. You all remember what happened with Broward and Dade counties, Miami-Dade, in the 2018 elections, with a crooked, slimy Democratic election board and supervisor. You saw what happened with ballot harvesting in California, which is, by the way, now made it legal. I'm not sure they can, but they're trying to. With 7 congressional seats snatched. By the way, that also happened to a seat in New Mexico, and happened to a seat, I believe it was in Georgia. And ballot harvesting, yeah. Let me tell you this one little case, and I'm going to give you a quote from Eric Holder. So there's a guy in Philadelphia. Yeah, what a gem that governor is. Love. You know, I can't even stand looking at him on TV. It's like Northam out of Virginia. I told you a long time ago, I got waylaid here. I told you a long time ago when the Las Vegas shooting occurred, if you looked at all the mass shooters, if you had their pictures in front of you, and a lot of people wrote me and said, by God, you know, I did it, and you're right. They all have that same kind of vacant, somewhat wild and crazy look in their eyes, with and their facial muscles are, I mean, if you saw them on the street, you'd know there was something wrong with them, that they were abnormal. And if you look at all these blue governors, Cuomo, Love, Northam, Whitmer, Inslee, Beal, the moron up in Vermont, the moron up in Maine, they all look alike. They all have this kind of smug look, and they all talk very softly, other than Cuomo, very softly, you know, like they're talking down to you. Because they want to make sure that the little people understand their vast intellect and their tremendous plans and their grasp and control of the situation for your own good. That's how they talk. They're all the same. Peas out of the same rotten pod. Rotten peas out of the same rotten pod. So this is in Philadelphia. Dominic J. DeMuro, he's a judge of elections. Think about this. The judge of elections of Philadelphia. He has pleaded guilty. The U.S. attorney got on his case. And he pleaded guilty to stuffing ballot boxes over the course of three different elections with fraudulent votes for Democratic candidates, by the way, in federal, state, and local elections. Quote, during his guilty plea hearing, DeMuro admitted that an unnamed political Democratic consultant gave DeMuro directions and paid him money to illegally add votes for certain Democratic candidates, the Department of Justice said. DeMuro pleaded guilty to, quote, a two-count information charging conspiracy to deprive Philadelphia voters of their civil rights by fraudulently stuffing the ballot box for specific Democratic candidates in 2014, 15, and 16, and a violation of the Travel Act, which forbids the use of any facility in interstate commerce, here a cell phone, with the intent to promote certain illegal activity, here a bribery. The U.S. attorney, by the way, his name is McSwain. A quote from McSwain. Our election system relies on the honesty and integrity of its election officials. If they are corrupt, the system is corrupt, which creates opportunities for election fraud and, unfortunately, the counting of fake votes. Dominic DeMuro did not uphold his duties as an election official. After receiving payments, this is still the U.S. attorney talking, after receiving payments ranging between $300 and $5,000 per election from the consultant, DeMuro would add fraudulent votes on voting machines, also known as ringing up votes, for the consultant's clients and preferred candidates, thereby diluting and distorting the ballots that were cast by actual voters. DeMuro would add fraudulent votes to the totals during the election day, and then he would later falsely certify that the voting machine results were accurate. He would add the fraudulent votes by literally standing in the voting booth and voting over and over and over again as fast as he could when he thought the coast was clear. In 2000, listen to this, folks. DeMuro's fraudulent votes accounted for over 22% of the total voting in his district in 2014. In 2015, over 50% of the total votes in his district, and in 2016 his fraud accounted for over 17% of the votes. I want you to think about those numbers. And you know, Tom Perez, the DNC, he's a slime ball too. Slime ball outfit, slime ball head of the outfit. Tom Perez said 2 days ago, we got to really be on the alert because Trump's going to try and steal this election. Yeah, you know, that put me on high alert because one thing that progressives are really good at is projection. Anything they accuse you of doing or accuse you of going to do, they are doing or going to do. So there's going to be rampant voter fraud in these upcoming elections. And it's up to us to catch it and to raise hell about it and to contest it. And then we have Eric Holder, Barry O's wingman. Quote, coronavirus gives us an opportunity to revamp our electoral system so that it permanently becomes more inclusive and becomes easier for the American people to access. It would be foolhardy to take these pro-democracy measures off the table after we get on the other side of the virus. These are changes that we should make permanent because it will enhance our democracy. Oh, well, okay. Make me gag, why don't you? Which brings us to China. Because the Dems are in bed with China. They support China. They defend China. I mean, it's really unbelievable. The shooting war with China, if it occurs, is going to be, if it happens now, let me step back. A war with China, unless the Chinese government collapses, is inevitable at some point in our history. Period. Russia is an enemy, but they are not the enemy. China is the enemy. You know, we post all sorts of articles, and I hope you folks read them or at least peruse them or skim them. You should read the section, China is our enemy. You should read the section, Constitution. And you should read the section, treason, this week. The reasons that war could occur earlier. Let me put it this way. The inevitable war will occur earlier. Or could occur earlier. Is number one, China thinks they can win. I'm not so sure they think they can win right now. Close, but no cigar. In addition, through the back channels, I've heard that China has now locked down. They have another coronavirus breakout. Or maybe it's a new bug they released on purpose. Who knows? And they have supposedly, I have not been able to verify this, so I might correct this next week, 100 million people in a number of cities locked down again, kind of like they did in Wuhan. Their economy, of course, was horrible in quarter one. It's not much better in quarter two. They're having a lot of problems getting people back to work in the factories because they don't think it's safe. You know, they're a victim of their own propaganda. And the world is not happy with them. I'm being nice. The world is not happy with them. In the meantime, they are trying to purchase, they're trying to buy companies for pennies on the dollar because of the scourge that they unleashed on the world. And They're probably thinking to themselves, it's not quite time. We're just not quite there. We need more stuff. We need kind of things quelled at home. The other reason, though, that could push them into an early war, which they're not afraid of, you listen to, I am going to tell you about that 2013 Chinese Communist speech, which will make you shake in your boots. But these people, folks, they don't care. They don't care about their own population. They got 1.4 billion people. What's 400 million? You know, more room for you and more room for me. And they sure as hell don't care about anybody outside their borders. But if they get squeezed, they've had two horrible quarters. The Chinese economy is laden with debt. Laden with debt. The world is not happy with China right now. The United States is applying screws to China again. You're going to see tariffs come up. You're going to see other things going on. It's already being planned. I'm going to talk to you more about it over the coming weeks. And the United States military is posturing to fight China. And China knows it. And, you know, sometimes the best way to avoid a fight is to make sure the other side knows you're ready to fight. And Japan is posturing for a Chinese war. The Japanese have more than tripled their navy in the past 8 years. State-of-the-art ships. And, of course, they've gotten around it saying that they are doing the Japanese Defense Forces. Because in the treaty signed in 1945, they could not expand their military offensively. But the United States is kind of closing blind eyes to this and assisting where they can. Because a formidable Japanese Navy, a formidable Japanese fighting force, and they are fierce fighters. And they are bitter enemies of the Chinese. The Japanese and the Chinese have been bitter enemies for thousands of years. And Japan is right there. And Japan has some of these South China Sea territories at risk. So they are gearing up like crazy. And don't think they're not gearing up, folks, because the United States is not goading them to gear up. I gave you several quotes last week. Peter Navarro, very close to Trump, chief Chinese negotiator, quote, "We are at war. Make no mistake about that. The Chinese unleashed a virus on the world," unquote. President Trump, "The Wuhan coronavirus attack is a Pearl Harbor against the United States. This is worse than Pearl Harbor. It is worse than the World Trade Center." Folks, I don't have to point out to you the context and the meaning of those words and the reason they're spoken, do I? The cutoff of funding to the WHO, a major Chinese ally. The gearing up of Japan. The gearing up of NATO. You know, Bloomberg had a great piece, so it was back in late April, about China, European disillusionment with China. And Europe is tired of the Chinese owning stuff. If China's put in a big enough pinch, You know, desperate people in desperate countries do desperate things. There's increasing amounts of unrest in China. I don't know if you've heard about it over the last week, because, you know, our press doesn't tell you squat. But did you know that there's huge uprisings in Hong Kong again? And did you know that the Chinese Politburo has passed an edict that they can make the laws for Hong Kong, and Hong Kong can't say anything about it, which is what precipitated these new riots? And did you know that for the first time in history, there are Chinese troops in Hong Kong? This is a huge deal, folks. Huge deal. And the military and the Trump administration are responding to it as I speak. So, if you take that problem, you take the attack on our rights here in the States, which I've talked about already this morning, and I'm going to talk more about this. It's really important that you understand what's going on with China, at least if it's just a brief update every week, because the press is not reporting to you at all. And this is a powder keg right now between the United States and China. A powder keg. Along with the rest of the world, I might add. Now, let me give you some sobering economic statistics. And not the usual crapola that you hear from the Trump's doing such a bad job, and this economy sucks, and that's the only thing he had going for him, and then we're going to kick his butt, and blah, blah, blah. No, not that. Much bigger picture. So here's what's happening in the world. It was happening before this nonsense coronavirus, but now it's happening exponentially. Debt to GDP, that's a huge factor. Gross domestic product is what a country outputs every year. And debt is the country's primary debt. United Kingdom, 85%. Believe it or not, they're the lowest. France, 99%. Spain, 98%. Belgium, 105%. Cyprus, 105%. Portugal, 121%. Italy, 134%. Greece, 181%. The pigs, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. 20 of the 28 European Union members, folks, are now deeper in debt than they have ever been before. Even more than in 2008. Japan has the largest government debt in the world. 1 quadrillion yen. 1 quadrillion yen. And the United States debt, I've done many shows in this. You can type it in the search bar. Type in unfunded liabilities. Everybody thinks the U.S. national debt is only, I put that in quotes, $23 trillion. No. The real national debt, this is the full faith and credit of the United States behind pensions and Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and yada, 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 ad infinitum, is somewhere between 110 and 200 trillion. Let me repeat that. 110 and 200 trillion dollars. And if you look at the world, and by the way, if you have we have a 24 trillion economy, or we had a 23 trillion in primary national debt. We're slightly under 100%, ridiculously high. If you had the unfunded liabilities, let's just say it's 100 trillion. I'll be kind. 500% of GDP. terrific. Overall debt in the world is 322%. 322% of world GDP. And global debt is now 40 percentage points higher at $87 trillion. This is primary debt. Higher than at the onset of the 2008 financial meltdown. Against the backdrop of all this, because, you know, moron blue state governors, until their hand is slapped by the federal government, if it is, hurricanes, blizzards, floods, like those poor people in Michigan. I mean, God, they can't get a break up there. I mean, you have this COVID manufactured nonsense. You have the shutdown. You have this wicked totalitarian witch, Whitmer, in the governor's office doing whatever she pleases. Your business is not, and then you have a flood. I mean, I really feel badly for them. It's horrible. Or you have an EMP attack, which could be Russia, Iran, China, or a terrorist organization. You have the current quote-unquote pandemic. You have a potential future pandemic or pandemics. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons for you to be prepared. And I've been talking about the last 3 weeks. Particularly relative to your defenses against an EMP. I talked about the bug out bag. I got a lot of emails on, tell me more about the bug out bag. What exactly is the bug out bag? How big is the bug out? I mean, all sorts of stuff. You know, the bug out bag, let me tell you the 15 bug out bag mistakes to avoid. Okay? That might be easier. If you avoid these mistakes, you will have a very good feel of what your bug out bag should be. Make sure it is not too heavy. Make sure you test it, or that you practice with it if it is a pack. Make sure if it is a pack that it is not a poor fit. Do not buy a poor quality pack frame. Do not buy an orange bag, folks. You want something that blends in, camo, or neutral, or green, or brown, or gray. This is not a fashion statement. It is a survival bag. Make sure you're going to attach, you do not want to attach gear to the outside of your bag. It will be a problem. Make sure, particularly if it's a pack bug out bag, that it is balanced. Not too high, not too low, the way it sits, not left, not right. Make sure that whatever you store in it, sharp edges, corners, that kind of stuff, liquids. Liquids should be in plastic bags in case they leak. Sharp corners, sharp edges should be kept away from your bag, you know, the walls of your bag. Make sure your bag is modular for easy access, different compartments. Or in a duffel, there's ways that you can... you can Google it up and see how you can do your own dividers in a duffel bag. Make sure that the cloth is relatively quiet. Do a little research on that. But anybody who's walked through the woods with a coarse nylon pack or Gore-Tex, something like that, you know it's noisy. Make sure, another big error, your bug out bag is not waterproof. Make sure it's waterproof. All right. The other thing I wanted to go over with you this morning, there's about 50 tools that you need in the event of an EMP. Remember that an EMP is going to knock out power, and it's going to knock out a lot of stuff that is battery operated, etc. But there's 50 or so. There's 50 or so tools that make a big difference, because you can accomplish about anything, even though it's by hand and it takes longer and it's more of a pain in the butt. So let me give you a screwdrivers. Just good old-fashioned hand screwdrivers. A hammer. A handsaw and a hacksaw. Or a handsaw, hacksaw. At least a small set of sockets, ratchets, and wrenches. A pin vise, which allows you to make kind of precision holes in cramped spaces. An axe. A push reel mower. Or a skiff, folks, a skiff, a map and compass. Have a map of your area and where you're going, and have a compass. Very important. A level. You want to have a level to tell when things are plumb or level. In the kitchen, you need mason jars and lids. You need a manual can opener, folks. You need a solar dehydrator, because your dehydrator is not going to work because it's a plug-in. You need a solar one. You need a crank grinder. You know, just the old-fashioned grind away. No, there's not many electric blenders or any of that stuff going on. You might want to look at a solar oven. If you have an electric oven, if your appliances are electric in your home, look at least a solar oven or solar burner. If they're gas, and you're in the city, it's going to be disrupted. If you're in the country, you're on propane, you kind of control your own destiny, which is nice. A kitchen timer. Cast iron cookware. Now, obviously, this is not stuff that you're going to pack out in your bug out bag. This is just stuff that you ought to have around if you're having any doubts or thoughts about where things are going. Next week, I'm going to go over the next 25 items that you should have, whether you're staying home versus the items I just gave you. Although your bug out bag should at least, and it should be enclosed in something leather, something tough, so that it doesn't go through your bag. But you know, you should have one or two screwdrivers or a multi-size screwdriver. There's screwdrivers you can buy. I'm sure you've seen them, where they actually have four heads right on the screwdriver. I think they're like $16. Great tool to have. I have one in my truck. It's terrific. Anyway, folks, that is the show for this morning. And I'm more or less on time. I'm only 8 minutes and 55 seconds over. I don't think the stations will shoot me for that, but who knows? people are crazy, crazy. And, you know, if they think I have coronavirus, well, they might definitely shoot me because they're going to stop the spread. They're going to stop the second explosion of the virus. In any event, you folks stay safe. Think about what I said about Memorial Day. Do not take any crap. Do not let these people walk on your rights. Do not keep your mouth shut. Do not give up your freedoms. Do not stop being an individual. And do not stop using and applying your common sense and your gut. Read Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.